recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Fire up the projectors, turn on your TVs, and adjust your antennas. It's time for the Screen Addicts Podcast with your hosts, Chris, Steven, and Jeremy.
And welcome to the Screen Addicts Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Chris, the no-fly zone Viegas.
I am Steven, falling into leaves, Sosa.
I'm Jeremy, that green guy.
Y'all are... You're gonna let me down. I went high, y'all went low.
I went about mid-ranged.
Hey, I'm the Hulk, so screw you.
Well, that's not bad.
You could have just said the Hulk. You didn't have to say...
I know, I was like, the green guy. Are you,
the green
are you
guy.
A CGI?
Yeah, well, he is so. CGI. He's the green meant, guy.
Like, but the green-suited guy that you wear when you get into the CGI.
Anyway, so welcome back, guys. Thank you for joining us this week. The Screen Addicts Podcast is a podcast where we talk anything on a screen. And this week, we are throwing down on our fall movie preview. I know it's kind of already started. There's been some big movies that have already come out, but there's still a lot left to graze over here. So we're gonna go over some and see. Maybe you should go see these at the theater. Maybe you should wait. We'll see. But before we hit on all of that, fellas, how have y'all been? How has this weekend treated y'all?
Oh, God. Let's just get this out of the way, okay? Your Broncos beat our Cowboys, and it wasn't even close. It was a massive, grueling beating, and just... I was just saying before that it was almost like an out-of-body experience watching that match, or the football game. I was just... My God. It was pure punishment.
No, it was pure bliss, and it was the most beautiful thing on a screen this weekend.
And I was like telling Jeremy, I was like, there are two people I never want to lose to, and that's Ray and Chris, because they're the worst gloaters. I take mine with a high chin and pure respectability, of course, all my victories. But yeah, it was bad. It was so bad.
Yeah. Ugly.
I will say, though, that it was a little bit, I mean, when your team gets brutalized like that, it's never easy to watch, but I don't think it was as bad as the Longhorns playing the, you know, USC. They went a double overtime with the fourth-ranked team in the nation, and we're not even ranked right now, and it just got that close just to lose. I would have just preferred they got blown out, but... I don't know. I mean, I guess either way, a loss is a loss, and you treat it the same. But man, I don't know what happened.
College, I mean, those rankings. I mean, you can go down into a double overtime, and if you're an unranked team going up against a ranked team like that, I mean, in college, yeah, a loss is a loss. But when it's that tough, that close, it does kind of matter.
Mm-hmm.
So. In a way it does, but it's kind of good Texas lost that game, because if they would have won, they would have immediately been ranked this week, and probably would have went to their heads, and then shit would have went off the rails again.
Oh, yeah, because BCS loves Texas in the rankings, man. They would have probably been 10th or something crazy.
Oh, yeah, it would have been some stupid ranking that they didn't deserve, and it would have went straight to their heads, and they would have been like, we're going to the playoffs. Hey, no, you're not.
Y'all know who's ranked number 15 right now?
TCU.
That's right, baby.
Yeah.
And our first big challenge is going to be this week. We go up against number 7, OSU. So we'll see exactly what we're made of after this week.
How long has OSU had that logo, that newish logo on the sides of their helmets?
Which the, is it just the letters or is it the cowboy guy?
It's the cowboy guy and it looks like the background is like the old wannabe cowboy star and some other funky designs.
Ouch, I have never seen it, I guess.
I guess they just debuted it last week then. Oh, it was bad.
But let's get back to the pros and, you know, how... Hey, can I ask y'all, how many rushing yards did Zeke have?
80?
Nine.
Oh, nine. My nine. Mistake.
No, he had nine rushes. For eight yards.
Oh, I had that backwards.
Did y'all see the graphic of that meme where it had like four quarterbacks that rushed for over 20 yards, and then they said all four of these quarterbacks rush more than Zeke? I was just like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. Yeah, but of course, anytime the Cowboys lose, people like jump on it, like flies on shit, and it's just like, come on. Nobody rags on the Browns this hard, but you know, when the Cowboys lose, it's like...
Because the Browns lose all the time.
Right. Well, you know, it's not like the Cowboys are... We haven't won a title in 20 years, so it's like we're not dominant anymore. We haven't been dominant in, you know, over 20 years, so it's still funny how...
You know what it is. You know what exactly it is. It's that, and I'm not necessarily pointing fingers at y'all, but it's the Cowboy fans that are so obnoxious.
Well, I also think that, you know, people like Jerry Jones put them out there like that. They showcase the team. And you know, and then you read stuff about Zeke Elliott not getting suspended for crimes that he obviously committed and he should have been punished for. And then you see all these things. You see all these guys pretty much getting rewarded to play on this team, even though they've committed some pretty criminal acts. And, you know, it's just one of those things where Jerry Jones... is really the only owner in the league, with the exception of a few, very few, that's kind of a... He's a star, quote-unquote star in his own right, like a celebrity in his own right. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, dude, you shouldn't even be the focal point of the team. Your team should be the focal point. I did read that Forbes released their numbers for the most expensive... or not the most expensive, but the most profitable team in the league, and for the... like 10th straight year it's the Dallas Cowboys, because it's like
they're not just the most profitable NFL franchise, they're that by miles. They're the most valuable team in America
in sports
period,
right? Which, and you know, you get that stigma, and so like if you're not a fan of the Cowboys, you're automatically wanting to resist the urge to celebrate that. You want to bring it down. You want to, you know, go against the mold, if you will. And it's just like anything. If you don't like it, well, yeah, you tend to hate on it. But I mean, there's a big group of the population that doesn't like the Cowboys. Because it's like, well, what about my team? Like, Chris, like, for example, the Broncos have won way more Super Bowl titles in recent years than the Cowboys have. And been
they
in the playoff
picture.
Well,
one.
Then that's one. Well, no. I mean, we've won what? They've won three since we've won our last one. That's my point. True. Like, that's...
Well, yeah.
That's the thing is, like, you get teams like that, you know, that aren't really celebrated on a mainstream platform like the Cowboys are. Even the Patriots aren't even celebrated on a mainstream platform like that. And they're the most dominant team in the league for over 12 years. And I don't know, I don't want to get this into a football podcast, but that's just kind of the thing that goes about. And I think anytime the Cowboys lose, it's like, you know, vultures feeding on the corpse.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, I do have to say the Booby Miles militia is rolling.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask you how we did. I didn't even check.
We won. We're 2-0.
Yeah, we beat... Josh and the Stale Popcorn Podcast.
Oh, our buddy Josh.
Yeah, so this week, I haven't looked who we take on yet, but whoever it is. Jeremy, you had bad advice.
Yeah,
that
really didn't. Well, Indy only scored 16 points.
We should have kept Denver's defense in. It's okay.
Dallas scored 17, so what difference does it make?
Well, we had a pick six. Anyway, moving on. Okay, we'll move on from football. Get back into our groove here. So, besides football, what else have you fellas watched, Jeremy?
Oh, let's see. I did start watching The Defenders, finally.
Oh, how is that?
It's good.
Do you think it's a little slow at the beginning? I mean,
it is.
Like
it drags a little bit.
I don't think it's spoilers, but like getting it to the point to where they're all together finally seems to take forever, does it not?
It does, but I guess you got to set
needed,
up.
You know,
it's called the build up.
Got to set up those individual arcs that lead to the Defenders.
Now, if you were, since you're watching it just now, if it's not called the Defenders, to me, it's like Iron Fist. It's a whole show about damn Iron Fist again. I mean, do you take away from that, or like, does it seem like an ensemble, or does it seem like it's more geared towards one person?
I'll have to watch some more of it. I'm only two episodes in, so.
Okay. Well, we'll revisit that then here in about a week or so.
But yeah.
So what else have you watched, man?
Oh, besides football, that's really it.
Man, when football comes around, you just stop watching everything.
Oh, for the first couple weeks of football, anyway, yeah. But now that the fall TV slate's starting up again, it looks like I'm going to have no choice but to start watching shit again.
Yep. All right, so let me see. Steven, do you have another marathon?
Kind of. Not a marathon as much as a half marathon.
Okay. So I'll go, because I think I've only watched like two or three things. I actually watched the new Kathy Bates Netflix original series called Disjointed. And it's pretty funny. It's about it's Kathy Bates. She opens up a medical marijuana store.
Nice,
sweet.
And like, I've never seen Kathy Bates. Like, she plays this like feminist, hippie, pro activist person. It's funny to see her this way. Like, she looks so old in this show, like super old, and she has a black son and like all these other people that work for her and stuff. And it's stupid funny. Like, it's so dumb it's funny, but it's a quick 8-episode watch, so I got through all of that already. And let's see, what else did I watch? I watched, I think that's about it. Oh, dude, guys, my big brother's about to end tomorrow.
Oh, that's too bad.
Oh, what a disappointment.
It is.
I'm so sad for you, Chris.
But you know what they're doing this fall, and I may have to talk about it if we do a fall TV preview next week.
What, but Big Sister?
No, Big Brother Celebrity.
Oh, Jesus.
Isn't that Twitter or TMZ?
Probably.
What celebrities are going to do this?
They haven't released it yet.
All right, let's see here. Let's do a quick rundown of what celebrities are completely out of the limelight that need 5 minutes of fame.
Tom Cruise.
Vanilla Ice.
Tom Cruise.
Yeah, the Iceman could be doing it. I could see him doing
Vanilla
one.
Ice.
Or
Snoop Dogg.
No, Snoop's still around. Snoop's good.
Martha Stewart.
Yeah, I could see Martha Stewart doing one. Let's see.
I don't really think you need to invest too much of
time into this. Okay.
We are excited for you, Chris.
I know. I'm excited. I don't care what you think. I'm. And Survivor's about to start. There's just
now. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So. Anyway, if we do a fall TV preview, we'll get more into that.
Oh, you know we will.
I think that's about all I watched this week, man. What do you got, Steven?
Okay, aside from the staples of Party of Five and the X-Files, which seem to have a billion episodes per show, I finished up Orange is the New Black. We caught up all the way to what they've already have airing. Good stuff. Yeah, good stuff. We watched a couple more Nashvilles. We're doing the slow burn with that, Chris. Like, it seems like we're taking two episodes a month, apparently, but slowly moving along with that. And we also... I have Vice Principals that came back on HBO. So friggin' funny, man. It's just madness. I love that show. It's the funniest half hour on TV. And we also started Santa Clarita Diet, the show where Drew Barrymore dies and becomes somewhat of the undead, and she becomes she craves human flesh, so her doting husband, played by Timothy Oliphant, helps her murder people, and she eats them, you know, while being a mild-mannered housewife and, you know, partner to her husband's realty company. It's from the creator, Ruben Fleischer, who directed Zombieland. He's the showrunner for the show, and it's funny, man. It's like... disjointed. It's on Netflix. There's only 8 episodes, so we're almost done with it. And Disjointed only 30 minutes long?
Yeah, they were really short
episodes. Yeah, that's like Santa Clarita Diet. It's only 30 minutes an episode, too. It's kind of like Glow. Like, they're really reducing the time of these shows. And that new show, that Friends Since College or Friends from College or whatever. And
yeah, you know, I started that one, too.
Like, that's another one of those, like, 8-episode, 30-minute shows. So it's really quick stuff, but so far that's good. As far as movies, I did this thing tonight, and it's kind of fresh in my mind, and it's a pretty cool thing at the library where you read the short story of The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, and then we watch the movie. And it was really cool, and it's funny because that short story is nothing like the movie. It's so distant from it, but... little shout out to our friends from the Stale Popcorn Podcast. Their episode that was the most recent episode posted was a review of The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. So the timing couldn't have been any better for that. So I was like, wow, this is like Walter Mitty Day, you know, 3 years after it came out. And so I listened to their podcast. It was really good. They had, you know, of course, really good, you know, viewpoints of the show, of the movie. And then I went and watched it again. I love that movie. It's like a criminally underrated movie. That movie, from a visual standpoint, is excellent. The performances are great. This notion of imagination and daydream is just brilliant. I love that movie. But another one that I watched is this indie flick called Band-Aid. And this was a movie, an independent release, and it stars Zoe Lister-Jones and Adam Paley. Like, they're not really well-known actors just yet. I think they're going to blow up pretty soon. They've done a lot of other little things and bit parts and stuff, and they play this married couple who are having, you know, some pretty intense difficulties living with one another and pretty much on their way, on the end of their relationship, and they somehow figure out that by playing music together, it allows them to express how they feel against one another. And they're really good at music and they're good singers. So it ends up being this thing where they're like, hey, let's keep playing music together. And then they bring in their neighbor, played by Fred Armisen from SNL in Portlandia. And he's their drummer. This dude's a weird, crazy sex addict. Like, he's hilarious. And he's their drummer. And so, you know, some things are revealed to the audience as to why they're in such a rut. And it was just really good, really cute little quirky film. And Okay, Jeremy, here's my big reveal. I watched Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man Tell No Tales.
Oh, dear God. Pirates of the Caribbean movie. How was that garbage?
Well, I will say that my expectations were extremely low for this movie. And that's pretty much the way that you should go about watching it, because it allows you to absorb what they're giving you. Because it wasn't really as bad as the last... That on... was it on Stranger Tides? Yeah, that's the last one. That one was so stupid. Like, who cares? And this one was a lot better. It had a lot of really great visual gags and some pretty decent storylines. But overall, I felt kind of the same way that I did when I watched Transformers the last night. It's just one of those things where it's like you're watching it. I'm like, you know, we've kind of seen all this before. Let's just stop making these movies because they're just redundant on a whole new level. But, you know, it's like if you still like Pirates of the Caribbean, then, well, I don't know. I mean, this one was also the lowest grossing of the group. Like, it didn't even make $200 domestic. So, by all accounts, that's not very good for them. But
oh, yeah, and I've tried to watch Transformers the last night, the last several nights, and I can't get through it all. It puts me to sleep. Every damn time I start it, I end up falling asleep.
Yeah.
You sound like me.
But I don't know. I don't know.
All right. Well, now I guess we'll break right into headlines. We don't got that many, I don't believe. We only got like three or four, but as always, we got headlines with Steven.
Thank you, Chris. For our headlines, we will start off with yet another celebrity death. They seem to be coming at us weekly at this point.
Yeah.
And this one was Harry Dean Stanton. And this guy has been around forever. And if you looked at his IMDb, 200, 300 plus things. He's been in bit parts. He's been in leading roles. He's been so many things. And, you know, most notably, I knew him from, you know, Escape from New York, The Brain. And, you know, he's in The Thing. He was in Pretty in Pink. He's Molly Ringwald's dad. And, I mean, that's just, like, just scratching the surface of all the stuff that this guy's done. But rest in peace, Harry Dean Stanton. Thanks again, death. And speaking of death, in our second headline, it was announced by the studio that for the newest Halloween movie that will be released in 2019... Jamie Lee Curtis will be returning as, you know, Laurie Strode in this new Halloween movie.
Okay, didn't she die in H2O?
I was telling, again, you know, my wife and our friend Erica, like, we were talking about this and how the Halloween timeline is starting to get as screwed up and convoluted as the Texas Chainsaw timeline. Like, Jamie Lee Curtis, her role in this is, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Because, yeah, you're right. In Halloween Resurrection, she died. She died. So it's kind of like, okay, so are we just going to forget that ever happened? It turns out that they're trying to say that this will be a sequel to Halloween 2. So,
oh, my God.
And what's crazy is that in Halloween 4 and 5, they had Jamie, which was played by Danielle Harris, little girl. That was supposedly her daughter. So then we already had to forget that that happened, because in Halloween H2O, her son was played by Josh Hartnett in his feature debut. So I was like thinking, okay, so I guess Jamie doesn't exist anymore. So now we're going to have to pretend that he doesn't exist anymore and that this is just a direct sequel to Halloween 2. I hate when they do that. It makes no sense. I was saying they should just bring Danielle Harris back and Josh Hartnett back and give some kind of goofy explanation as to where they were and have them all be together as one big happy family running from Michael Myers. I mean, if it's already going to be as crazy as bringing her back to begin with, like, why not just go all the way with it and, you know,
bring everybody
just
back.
Bring everybody back. You know, it just doesn't make any sense, but you know how people are with nostalgia and fan fever. They just love having all that back. So I guess, you know, it's kind of like I had this idea of, if they were going to redo Nightmare on Elm Street, just call it Elm Street and make it a sequel to, you know, Nightmare 3 and have Heather Langenkamp and Johnny Depp as a married couple and their kids are being attacked by Freddy. You know, just kind of bring it all together somehow. But, I mean, it's not that hard. It's not that hard to write logical explanations for some of this stuff. Because I'll give Friday the 13th one thing. Over 9 movies, the continuity between those 9 are pretty damn impressive, you know?
Yeah.
Because I rewatched it when we got the Blu-rays, and I thought, man, this literally cuts right, you know, no pun intended, cuts right into the next one. Like, almost seamlessly. Like, these are true sequels. I was like, wow, that's impressive. But, I don't know. They just, they can't help themselves. And my third headline were that the Emmys aired last night, with a couple of new surprises. I was looking at the nominations list. I didn't watch the show. I heard Colbert was funny as hell. My mom said he was hilarious. And I didn't see the show, though. But
didn't the ratings tank?
Yeah, it did not do well. A lot of these award shows are starting to slip. Like, every single major award show this year, including the Golden Globes and the Oscars and the Grammys, like, all of these big award shows are just, man, they're just crashing at the ratings returns, and it's so bizarre. I guess people just don't want to see celebrities, you know, being awarded for their merits or something. It's not like they're getting a cash prize or anything, but some of the new things that happened, well, Game of Thrones wasn't even nominated at all because I guess because of its release time. Since it got pushed back a couple of months, that it missed its...
So it'll be nominated next year for right. This season. Oh, that's
right,
because
when I looked at the...
Stupid!
It is, too. When I looked at the nominations list and I saw 0 for Game of Thrones, I was like, oh, I'm sorry, what the hell is going on? So I did a little bit of research and it said it missed the deadline for nominations by like a couple of weeks or something. So I was like, oh my God, just cause it got delayed. Give me a break. But yeah, next year, it'll just rack them all up. But you know, nothing really too noteworthy. The Handmaid's Tale, the show on Hulu that I heard about, won best dramatic series. You know, and just some of the obvious ones like Julia Louis-Dreyfus won again for Veep. And Veep won Outstanding Comedy Series. Donald Glover won again for Atlanta, which I'm still dying to watch. And you know, Sterling K. Brown, Chris, won for This Is Us, so that was kind of cool.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, typical stuff. But did you guys watch the Emmys?
No.
Did not. That's why the ratings were so low.
You know, if it wasn't for my mom reminding me that it was on, I totally would have forgotten. But I didn't even watch them either. I had football to watch, man. I was about to say,
wasn't that Sunday night? So, yeah, I was watching the game.
But, yeah, Emmys came and gone. Whimper, you know, didn't really draw much of an issue with anything. And my final headline... It repeats number one at the box office, and it is very, very close. By the end of this week, for sure, it'll be the highest-grossing R-rated horror movie, beating The Exorcist, which held that record since 1973. It was the highest-grossing R-rated horror movie in history, and it is going to... Well, it's going to topple it, and then they said by the end of its run, it will finally dethrone The Sixth Sense as the highest-grossing horror film of all time, so...
Good.
And this movie's no joke, man. And it's kind of funny that... I mean, I like The Sixth Sense and all, but as far as all the horror movies ever made, that was the highest grossing. And that's held on since, what, 1999?
And I don't even really consider that a horror movie.
Well, they say, like, supernatural horror, so it's, like, falls into that genre, you know? And
it's more of a thriller.
Yeah, but you know how it is. It's, like, wishy-washy with all that stuff. And I'm going off box office mojo, too, so they're, like, categorizing it all.
Well, if you really break it down, I mean, yeah, it is kind of scary, but...
It's somewhat supernatural, too, when you think about it.
Oh, yeah. But
it's a comedy to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny. Pretty soon, it'll be the highest grossing R-rated comedy. Look out, Deadpool.
Right?
But, yeah, that's all I had for headlines this week, fellas.
Cool. All right, so as we jump right into our main topic here, guys, you know, if we're going to, I think we're going to rattle off what, I think, did you come up with a list of like 10, and then we're going to come up with some more that maybe are not on this just main list of 10? Is that how we're going to roll it?
Sounds good.
Okay. So if you hear some, or if you do not hear something that you're like, hey guys, you need to look out for this movie, don't forget to hit us up, let us know. So alright, so as we get into it, we've got a list of 10 here, and let's see, Steven, since this is your list, start it off, man, and it's all of our list really. Start it off, and let's see how we're going to alternate picks here.
The way that I was devising this list, I was kind of looking at it from a universal perspective, not so much of an individual one, because, okay, you know, not everybody, or not any of, well, I guess, yeah, not even our listeners would also agree, but these are just kind of the main points to kind of look at for the...
Again, these are no specific order, right?
Right, right. Okay. Well, maybe the last two are.
Well, yeah.
But and like you said earlier, Chris, that we have, you know, we have already surpassed a couple of big fall movies. Like, for example, It would be definitely a top 10 in this top 10 list, but it's already come and gone. And we're pretty much going to start off with number 10 with a film that's coming out this Friday, and that would be Kingsman: The Golden Circle.
We're from the Kingsman Tailor's Shop in London. Maybe you've heard of us?
Today marks the beginning of a new age. But I'm going to show you. Say goodbye to the Kingsman.
Kind of got a bit of a save the world situation here.
Welcome to Statesman.
As your American cousins, we'll be working side by side.
Let's get started.
We've got brains, skills, skipping rope.
Lasso.
Whatever.
It's very American.
Yeah, it is.
Manners maketh man.
Do you know what that means?
Matthew Vaughn came back, and he has assembled an all-star cast to join Taron Egerton, Mark Strong, and Colin Firth. And they're going to add on, as cast members, Julianne Moore, Jeff Bridges, and Channing Tatum. Oh, and Pedro Pascal, who was Oberyn Martell. So it's always nice to see that guy from Game of Thrones with his head still intact in movies. And basically this one is the Kingsmen have to go to the United States of America and join up with the Statesmen and defeat this formidable foe as both of their, I guess, companies join together. And from the looks of it, it looks like the same kind of madcap, amazing, awesome ballet of bullets and blood will be sprayed across theater screens yet again. I love Kingsman, the Secret Service, the original. It's such a great movie, and I didn't know anything of the property, and I didn't even realize that it was a comic. I never heard of it. I'm not going to be one of those, yeah, I knew, I read all the issues. No, I had no idea what it was. And then I kind of looked into it afterwards, but watching it, it was just such a breath of fresh air. Samuel Jackson had such a great villainous performance in that movie that for somebody who's been in so many films to reinvent himself in such an original way was incredible. And I just loved the action. And they were, man, balls to the wall, gore, violence. I was just taken aback at some points. I was like, holy shit. But it was just such a great movie, and I expect good things from Kingsman, The Golden Circle.
Yes. Yeah,
from the trailers, I'm not a huge Tatum fan. And I don't know what to think of him in this movie. Like, I don't think it's... I know he's Mr. G.I. Joe and shit like that, but I don't think he's Kingsman worthy.
Well, I think that's the distinguishing traits of the Statesman. Like, they seem more like American cowboy-esque. Yeah,
he's the American.
And I'm just saying, is going along with, like, you know, the action of the movie and stuff like that. I just see Channing Tatum is still like step up.
What the hell is wrong with that?
Nothing at all. I don't see him as an action star is what I'm saying. Like, that's why it's pissing me off.
Well, this is the dude. Yeah, I was about to say, this is the dude that's going to be Gambit. So
I think Channing Tatum gets kind of a bad rap. Like, yeah, if you want to throw him in the box of Magic Mike and all, which I actually like that movie. It's a pretty well done film.
It's not bad.
And but like when you watch stuff where he's taken himself in kind of a less than serious role, like his performances in the 21-22 Jump Street films are great. And he's actually doing this show on Amazon Prime where him and Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Nick Offerman from Parks and Rec, they took this old 70s Russian program called Comrade Detective, and what they did was they took the episodes from that show and dubbed them with voiceovers by Channing Tatum and Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Nick Offerman, and it is crazy funny. Like, it's really funny, because the show starts out with Channing Tatum getting a tape that says Comrade Detective, and he's like, what the hell is this? He's like, I don't know, you should just watch it. So he watches it, falls in love with it, and wants to dub over all of the episodes. Like, it's very funny. And I think that, I don't know, I think they try to put him in a lot of stuff, too. Like you said, like, he's in G.I. Joe, they want to make him an action star, and then they try to make us think something else, and then, you know, they put him in something like The Vow, where they want him to be this leading ladies' man, and he gets tossed around a lot.
And Logan Lucky yet?
No, and I heard again that he's really good in that. Like, he's really genuinely funny in that. I don't know, Chris. I'm starting to think that you might be a little jealous of old Tatum.
Isn't Logan Lucky a Soderbergh movie?
Yeah, that's the Soderbergh one.
Yeah, that's why.
I don't know, man. Well, I mean, I guess we'll see. I
think in a capable director's hands, like Steven Soderbergh, for example, he knows how to work with Channing Tatum.
Yes. Because
he did a good job in Magic Mike. He clearly knew what he was capable of doing in Logan Lucky. And I think with someone like Matthew Vaughn, who can take certain actors, like I said, like he helped Samuel Jackson transform into this unknown character that we've ever seen him play before in the first Kingsman. And I think he's a capable enough director to get him where he needs to go. And having him and Jeff Bridges as just grizzled old cowboys shooting it up like it's the Wild West, it just kind of makes sense, man.
Yeah.
But, we'll, you know, teach his own. We'll see how it goes.
The bar is not set too high for me. I'm not trying to put him and be like, he's got to be this amazing to be great. If he's halfway decent in Kingsman, I'll be happy.
I know what this is about. Chris, you are way better looking than Channing Tatum, okay? So let's just put that out there, all right?
You know, like, I have two of his bodies.
You know what's weird? This is the first sequel Matthew Vaughn has ever made.
That is true. He didn't even do the second X-Men movie.
He didn't even do Kick-Ass 2.
Just
think of the wonders he could have done with Jim Carrey if he would have done Kick-Ass 2.
Yeah, and that also shows you how much he really values this property, this Kingsman property, because if he's willing to come back and do a sequel...
And he already has a third one in the works.
Yeah, that makes sense. Oh, and Halle Berry's in it, too. That's just random casting of actors and actresses.
All right. You know, I would say let's alternate, but this number 9 pick that you have... That's all you, dude. It's all you, Steven.
Okay. Number 9 is Geostorm.
I was about to say, put it on please, here. I don't want to be saddled with this one.
Yeah, give it to Jeremy. Okay, number 9, Geostorm. Is solely on this list because it is the only one that is just pure summer spectacle of big, massive special effects that really are only there to just show property damage, and we haven't had that in a while, and it's just kind of, well, I guess if you count San Andreas that came out a couple of years ago, but nothing like this, like the whole idea of this plot where we have satellites in the sky that can control the weather, that go haywire and cause all forms of bad weather to happen. It's just madness and brilliant altogether.
No, it's,
and it's also really
brilliant.
Stupid.
It's stupid.
but man, those trailers, like, it's just so crazy. I'm watching this thinking, okay, you remember when Into the Storm came out a couple of years ago?
Yeah, and it was just garbage.
I will say that I was duped. Okay, I saw that trailer thinking the same thing, and I was like, oh, this could be kind of fun in a bad way, but it was just bad.
It was not fun. It was stupid.
Yeah, I rewatched it. It wasn't as bad as I remember, but it's still not good either. And I don't know why I am excited to see this. I just, maybe I've been longing for that big summer disaster
and
flick that we haven't had.
This is Dean Devlin's directorial debut.
You know, Roland Emmerich has been holding him down for 20 years. This is Dean's time.
So I mean, we'll see. If this is what we're going to get after all these years of waiting to see what Dean Devlin could do behind the camera, it's good that he's just a little bitch behind the camera.
I'm counting it right now, 100% Rotten Tomatoes.
More like 1%.
0%. I don't know. It's just going to be ridiculous, but... It seems odd to have a movie like that come out in the fall, too. It always seems like that should be something suited for the summer, but...
Actually, it should be for January, but whatever.
in the February doldrums. But yeah, number 9, Geostorm. If you want senseless, you know, special grand disaster effects, just go for Geostorm.
And when is that coming out?
It was slated for October at some point, so okay. I should probably get the actual dates on these things, but yeah, October.
All right. Jeremy, do you want to take the next one, or do you want me to have it?
You can take it.
Okay. So, number 8 on our list here is going to be Jumanji. Welcome to the Jungle.
Well, this is a fun group. Welcome to detention. Spencer, Bethany, Fridge, Martha. You're all here for a reason.
Hey, person walking!
You should be thinking about who you are and who you want to be. You'll have plenty of time to figure that out while you're cleaning out the basement.
Are you gonna help or are you too pretty?
I'm too pretty.
Yo, what's this?
A game for those who seek to find a way to leave their world behind. Jumanji. You pick a character and you're that person in the game.
Which one do I pick?
I don't think it matters that much.
Moose Finbar. Sounds like a badass.
I'll be the curvy genius.
Dr. Smolder Bravestone.
I guess I'm Ruby Roundhouse.
Where's the rest of me?
Oh my God, Fridge?
Yeah, I'm Fridge. Who are you?
It's me, Spencer.
Who is she?
Martha?
Why am I wearing half a shirt and short shorts in the jungle?
I think we got sucked into Jumanji and we become the avatars we chose.
So that means...
Bethany?
Oh, wait, Bethany? Don't look at it!
I'm an overweight middle-aged man. Well, I don't have my Claritin, and all I see around here is pollen.
Well, I don't have the top 2 feet of my body.
Damn, that is a man right there. Don't cry, don't cry. Don't cry, it's gonna be okay. Welcome
to the jungle. This is a video game, which means we all have special skills.
Why am I running so slow?
That was so intense. I, like, can't even with this place.
Watch your step in here.
Maybe we're all in a coma.
What?
That old game machine must have electrocuted all of us, and now we're all...
Oh, my God! You better get in there and save her.
I'm not gonna get in there. You get in there.
I got a backpack on. You don't get in water with a backpack. Everybody knows that.
Its release date is December 20th. 2017. The first couple of trailers have already hit the interwebs and been a couple of movies. So, you know, it's going to be The Rock, Kevin Hart, Jack Black, and what's her name?
Karen Gillan.
And, you know, there's been a lot... We've talked about this a couple times, you know. They're kind of breaking away from the original, but kind of, like... They're straying away from it, but kind of staying the same. You know what I mean? And they're moving away from a board game into a video game. The game is not going to be played in their home. They're going to actual Jumanji, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it's a whole new take on Jumanji. So, I mean, it's a big hit or miss to me. If it's funny enough, I think it's going to be great. If it's not funny, it's not going to be good at all. It's going to be another Baywatch for The Rock.
Poor Rocky.
So
he had a bad year, man, because that Baywatch just did not do him any favors at the box office. It was what they would consider his first flop. So he needs this one in a bad way.
And I don't think it would be too bad. I mean, Kevin Hart has proven himself as he's pretty decent when it's him and somebody else. And this is the first movie Jack Black's been in a while, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what was the last Jack Black movie? I mean, I know, like, the last big comedy he was in Gulliver's Travels, and that was a bomb, man. And that was probably, it was so bad that it was probably why that was the last one that I could think of. He did Bernie, that independent film with Richard Linklater that was really, really, really good, but from a box office return, it didn't really, you know, light the world on fire.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, to me, and this is just me, I like that they're taking a whole new perspective on it I like that they're doing a video game. I like that they're going to Jumanji and not just going to be like trying to remake the original, the whole thing. So I hope it goes over well. I'll definitely probably go see it opening week, if not definitely the second week that it's open. So what about y'all?
Oh, I mean, I'm excited for it. Like, I think it'll be a lot of fun. The new territory, the new setup, and the cast is great. Like, I think with a cast like that, it's gonna be pretty difficult to mess up unless the writing is just really, really bad. But you know, The Rock can carry movies on his own, but he seems to be in a lot of ensemble pieces lately. Whether it would be, you know, the Fast movies, Baywatch, Jumanji, even Ballers, like on his HBO television series, he's surrounded by a bunch of cast members. So, I don't know. I don't know why he keeps putting himself in these situations. Maybe he just likes to look like he's the tallest person in the room or something, but I think it'll be pretty good.
He's realizing it's easier, it's less work when there's a whole lot more people around to take scene time up.
That's true. And I also got the release date of Geostorm. It is actually October 20th.
Oh.
So,
mark your,
you know,
calendars,
be there at the
people.
Theater the same time that I will be on the opening day.
Yeah, bullshit.
Connor, my son, is like so excited to see that movie. He
Why?
Loves Natural Disaster. Because he loves natural disaster movies, and he's 13, Jeremy.
Did you explain to him how stupid this idea is?
Yeah, who cares? It's like, you remember the dumb shit we were watching when we were 13?
Okay, we never watched anything this fucking dumb.
I don't know about that.
I don't know.
Come on.
This is pretty wretched.
With the listeners here. Yeah, but he just loves disaster movies, like natural disaster movies. He'll watch tornado shows on TV all the time.
Oh my god!
Like, he's not afraid of Jason or Pennywise or any of that stuff. But if you tell him there's a hurricane watch, oh my god, he's freaking out. You know, you kind of did that to yourself.
I guess he was all eyes glued to the Hurricane Irma coverage.
Oh, man, I got a funny picture of him just zoned in on the TV. He's not even sitting down. He's, like, standing up, just getting...
Oh, my God.
Like, you all right over there, man? It'll be okay. But, you know.
Okay. Let's get off of Geostorm.
Yes, please.
Sorry. So sorry. You say that now.
Right. All right. So number seven on our list, Jeremy's going to take
it. Okay, number seven. Well, it's a remake. It's a remake of the 1974 movie of the exact same name, Murder on the Orient Express.
know there is something about a tangle of strangers. Pressed together for days with nothing in common but the need to go from one place to another and never see each other again. I see evil on this train. A passenger has died.
So they got him after all.
You assume he was killed?
No. Not. Well, he was in perfectly good health. He had his enemies.
Indeed, he was murdered.
God. Murder here.
God rest his soul.
Someone was rummaging around my cabin in the middle of the night. No one would listen to me.
If there was a murder...
What is going on?
Then there was a murderer. The murderer is with us. And every one of you is a suspect.
And who are you?
My name is Hercule Poirot, and I am probably the greatest detective in the world.
I don't really remember the original. This new one has an all-star cast, directed by Kenneth Branagh, Johnny Depp, Michelle Pfeiffer, Daisy Ridley, Penelope Cruz, Willem Dafoe, Kenneth Branagh, Judi Dench. I guess it'll be good. I don't know.
Well, if you don't remember the first one...
No, I not in the...
You don't really have nothing to...
No, I don't.
To measure it up.
None whatsoever. I have no idea.
Maybe you watched the first one before this?
I don't really want to watch the first one because it doesn't interest me in the least.
You know, the Murder on the Orient Express, it's a story written by Agatha Christie, and I don't think she introduces the character of Inspector Hercule Poirot, this famous British investigator, popular in a lot of her novels. But this is very British. It's one of those types of stories that isn't going to be Under Siege 2, where it's just an action fest on a train. It's just very methodical, very talky, and I think it's so funny seeing Star Wars cast members outside of Star Wars. Like, seeing Daisy Ridley in that, I'm like, Ray, what are you doing? Go back to training. What are you doing here? And it's like that Imperial Dreams on Netflix, like Finn's in that. And I'm like, what are you doing here? Go back to the galaxy, Finn. And but yeah, that's a great cast. And it's so funny seeing Johnny Depp, like, weasel his way into these, like, British properties as a full-on American.
How the hell did Johnny Depp get in this? He's just been in a bunch of shit lately, and he's getting in this?
He's good at accents. We all know this. So he gets a pass, you know. But it's a very good story. It's just a nice little, almost Hitchcockian type, suspense. It's not even really like a thriller. Well, I guess maybe it is. There's a lot of kind of comedy to it.
I see, it's listed as a crime drama mystery.
Right. It's very much like Clue without a lot of the laughs.
Yeah, you know? It's Clue without Professor Plum.
I think
it's on a train.
And on a train.
It's kind of interesting that they decided to remake this instead of one of the other hundreds of novels that Agatha Christie has written. And because there's a lot of really good stuff that she's written. And it's just like, why didn't that get adapted into a movie for the first time? But I guess Murder on the Orient Express, the original, it garnered a lot of Academy Awards contendership. So I guess maybe that's what they're going for this time around. But, I mean, with Kenneth Branagh as the director, like, the guy can direct, man. He can do anything from Hamlet to Thor. So there's not really a property I don't think that he can maintain. And doing ensemble pieces. Like, he's known for being a director on the London stage as well. So he can direct an ensemble too. So I think it'll be pretty good.
Yeah. This is a little off topic, but I just remembered because of we're talking about Murder on the Orient Express. I tried so hard to watch Train to Busan.
To Busan.
I couldn't do it.
Oh, dude.
I tried, guys. I really did. I just couldn't do it.
Why?
Maybe it's because I started it late. But every time, I've tried to watch it like 3 times now. And within 20 minutes of the movie, I'm out.
I don't know, man.
It's because I have to read.
Yeah, mate. I think you should just see it through because that movie is fantastic.
Yeah.
It is a phenomenal film. You want to, and speaking of train movies, like Snowpiercer, that's another one you should watch.
Hey, you don't have to read subtitles in that one.
That's true. It's from the director of Okja.
Oh, I love Okja.
So, but yeah, Train to Busan, man. That's a great movie. You got to see it through, man.
We'll see. All right. Let's see. I want to take this next one.
Number 6.
And you can have number 5, Steven. How's that?
Sure.
Okay. Okay, so the number 6 movie on our list is Coco.
It's you.
You're gonna get me in trouble, Dante.
Someone could hear me.
I wish someone wanted to hear me. Other than you.
I know I'm not supposed to love music.
No music. No music.
But my great-grandma Coco's father was the greatest musician of all time.
Papa.
Ernesto de la Cruz.
One day, he left with his guitar and never returned.
Now my family thinks music is a curse.
Great-great-grandfather, none of them understand me.
I'm supposed to play music.
All right, who's in there?
I'm sorry. What's going on? I'm just dreaming.
Do you mind?
Welcome to the land of the dead.
Dante, wait up! You gotta stay with me, boy.
This isn't a dream, then. You're all really out there.
Agents at the Department of Family Reunions are available to assist you.
Please be on the lookout for a living boy.
Miguel? You're here.
We're your family, mijo.
I know your great-great-grandpa.
I'll get you to him.
What are you doing?
I'm walking like a skeleton.
No, skeletons don't walk like that.
It's how you walk.
No, I don't. When there's no one left in the living world who remembers you, you disappear from this world.
But you can change that.
We gotta find my great-great-grandpa.
You gotta do it by sunrise.
What happens at sunrise?
You'll be stuck here forever. What?
Ugh. I'm a big fan.
Never forget how much your family loves you.
It's almost sunrise.
One cannot deny who one is meant to be.
It's you! I am terribly allergic.
But Dante doesn't have any hair.
And I don't have a nose, and yet here we are. It's you!
It's a new Pixar flick, based on, I guess, Hispanic heritage. And I just read the little thing right fast. Despite his family's generation-old ban on music, young Miguel dreams of becoming an accomplished musician like his idol, Ernesto de la Cruz. Hey, I got it, yeah. And this... Desperate to prove his talent, Miguel finds himself in the stunning, colorful land of the dead. After meeting a charming trickster named Hector, the two friends embark on an extraordinary journey to unlock the real story behind Miguel's family history. This movie is going to be released on November 22nd, so next week? Or is it this week?
November is...
November. My bad. Dang. Anyway, November 22nd.
Did you see the trailer for this, Chris?
Yes, I have, man. And what makes me sad about it is, like, the Hispanic heritage doesn't get a lot of cartoons, Pixar, you know. But every time they do, it has to deal with Dia de los Muertos, which is Day of the Dead. Like, the Book of Life. What was that about? Day of the Dead. And the Sugar Skulls and everything like that. To me, that's all that's ever been put out there about, like, the Hispanic heritage. Which, you know, it's a big deal, yeah, but, I mean, come on, there's other things. Like tortillas.
I'm sure they'll have those in there. I think it looks breathtaking. Like, I can't remember the last time Pixar put something out there where I was just like, this looks absolutely beautiful. I think Walt Disney Pictures have actually kind of taken the reins from them a little bit. But I saw that trailer. I thought, this is going to be an amazing movie. I cannot wait to see this.
Yeah, like the colors and, I mean, and that's just the Mexican heritage. I mean, just all the bright, vivid colors. I'm colorblind, and it looks beautiful to me because I can tell a little bit, you know, all the difference between of all the colors and stuff, and it just looks so vibrant, so inviting, I guess. I don't know. But, yeah, Coco, it looks good. The music is probably going to be great, and it'll be a good family movie to go watch during the Thanksgiving holiday. So that is number six, Coco.
Okay, well, I will take number five, if you do not mind, Chris and Jeremy.
Hey, you take five and four, because I don't really care about either one of those.
Really?
No.
Okay. How about three? I bet you want three.
I want three.
Okay. Okay. So number five on our list is a film directed by James Franco and starring James Franco. It is called The Disaster Artist.
Los Angeles, everybody wants to be star. You have to be the best and never give up.
When I get up on stage in front of people, all I can think about is, what if they laugh at me? You, man, you're fearless. I want to feel that too.
I don't care. I'll do it.
You and me, we both have this dream.
Yeah, I guess we do. And we'll be famous. We'll show them. Watch out, here we go. To be or not to be.
It's not going to happen for you. Not in a million years.
What, after that? This town, Greg, they don't want me.
Wish we could just make our own movie.
A great idea. So there's this guy, Johnny, a true American hero, to be played by me. He has it all. Good luck, many friends, and also maybe Johnny is a vampire. We'll see.
This set of the alleyway looks exactly like the real alleyway.
That's right.
Well, why don't we just shoot in the real alleyway?
Because it's a real Hollywood movie.
No, yeah, sounds good.
Okay.
Action!
I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
But it doesn't work if you're looking at the camera.
And then this beautiful girl. Anything for my princess. She betrayed him.
And then this guy, Johnny.
You go crazy. Nobody respect my vision. You are a villain. I do this whole movie for you, Greg. You are tearing me apart, Lisa.
Cut.
Why you cut, Sandy? This is great. This is real acting.
If you're going to writhe around with the dress, maybe do it before you shoot yourself in the head and blow your brains out.
I disagree.
You're really going to make this thing?
We are going to die. Together.
Tommy, this is not necessary.
No, very necessary. I need to show my ass to sell this movie.
I think you're aiming a little bit.
I am what I aim. Just do the scene.
Why is he having sex with her belly button?
He knows where her vagina is, right?
Now, to set up this movie, you would have to have seen the film The Room that was released in 2003. The Room is a spectacle on its own. It has taken a life of its own. It has created a deep-seated target in pop culture history because it is known for pretty much being one of the worst pieces of shit films ever made. It's so laughably bad that I have to recommend it for everybody to see, just to see how bad it is. Jeremy, you've got to see this movie. It is, it's madness. I remember one time when I was in college and they were doing a special screening of it at this independent theater, so we went and saw it, and I was just like, yep, that's pretty much what they said. This is definitely one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. And it's kind of taken on that Troll 2 type of mentality where it's so bad, it's funny. And, you know, the filmmakers, out of their own sheer embarrassment, say that, oh, that was the intention all along to make it funny. No, dude, you were trying your heart out. That's why people admire it, because we do acknowledge the fact that you were trying so hard, but you just failed. And basically what The Disaster Artist is the making of The Room. It's like Ed Wood. Ed Wood was a film about Ed Wood making his movies. Well, The Disaster Artist is about James Franco starring as Tommy Wiseau, who played the writer, director, producer of The Room, as he's attempting to write and produce and direct his own film. And it's just life imitating art, and it looks absolutely incredible. Only if you had seen The Room. If you haven't seen The Room, you won't really get why it's so funny. But the fact that they're acknowledging these types of films is great, because it just shows that, hey, you know, even these actors who've been nominated for Oscars like to watch crappy movies sometimes. So, but yeah, that's The Disaster Artist, number 5. Oh, and that'll be released December 9th, by the way. Probably in limited cinemas. So we probably won't be getting it until it gets called up for Oscar contention. So that's nice, but...
All right. Go ahead.
Number 4.
Oh, I don't want number 4 either.
Okay. Number 4 is probably the most ambitious film on this list, as Warner Brothers is attempting to resurrect a franchise that really wasn't ever a franchise, but a solo entry of its own. 1982's Blade Runner will be returning in the sequel as Blade Runner 2049, starring Ryan Gosling and Harrison Ford.
Every civilization was built off the back of a disposable workforce. But I can only make so many. Happy birthday.
There is an order to things.
That's what we do here. We keep order.
The world is built on a wall that separates kind. Tell either side there's no wall, you bought a war.
You're a cop. I had your job once. I was good at it.
I know.
What do you want?
I want to ask you some questions. The key to the future is finally unearthed. Bring it to me. They know you're here.
I always told you, you're special. Your story isn't over yet. There's still a page left.
Ha ha. I don't really know why this is happening, but I don't either. It is. I am one of the few people that actually think the original Blade Runner isn't all that great. I don't know why it's held up as this holy grail of science fiction. But
then why is this on the list?
But this one has high promise, because
there's a 90-year-old Ford in it.
Sure, but he's not the focal point. Yeah. It's shifting to Ryan Gosling. But the thing that makes this such a front runner is the fact that Denis Villeneuve, who directed Prisoners, Sicario, Arrival, like, this guy, man, he is an amazing filmmaker. Like, he's really, really good at what he does. And I think that if given a property like this to take it off and make it his own, I think it could be really well done. It's almost like as if somebody else came in and directed Alien Covenant from Ridley Scott, it probably would have been better. But it's like if Ridley Scott was directing this one, I would think, okay, well, it's going to be more of the same. But I think that this one is going to be a really, really, really good movie. Although, I did get its running time today. And
isn't it 2.5 hours?
It's 2 hours and 45 minutes long.
Jesus Christ.
Oh my gosh.
So I was like, wow, that is really long. Even the original was only like 2 hours long. Like, and the director's cut is like maybe 130 minutes. I don't remember for sure, but I know it wasn't that long. But wow. I was like, wow, that is extremely ambitious. But I don't know. It could be interesting. But yeah, I'm it's hard to pinpoint exactly how I feel about this movie until I actually get to see it. But I definitely will see it. So number four is Blade Runner 2049. Jeremy, take us away to number three.
Number three. All right. Coming out close to my birthday on November 3rd, Thor Ragnarok.
You're thinking, how did this happen? Well, it's a long story.
Asgard is dead.
What have you brought today? Tell me.
A contender.
It's main event time.
Each other. He's a friend from work.
Oh, come on.
And if you've seen the trailers for this, this looks like the most fun Thor movie made yet of the previous two. This one looks like the most fun. You got Thor fighting Hulk. You got
he's teaming with Hulk. He's teaming with Loki.
Yeah,
he's trying to fight
Cate Blanchett.
She looks pissed.
She looks like a pissed off deer.
Exactly.
A deer from hell.
Yeah.
I mean,
hey, did you guys by any chance see that trailer that I posted where it was Thor in the 80s? Or it's a 80s 1987 cut version of Thor Ragnarok, the trailer. If you haven't, you need to watch it because it is amazing. You know what? Oh, go ahead, Jeremy.
Oh, yeah. And the poster for this movie is just psychedelic awesome. There's no getting around it. It's just colorful as all kinds of shit, and it's just badass.
I think they realized that they were like, we probably should have been doing to Thor what we've been doing to the Guardians movies the last few years.
Yeah, so make it. We're gonna try fun. It this time
because I think
they make it 80s. Like it's getting old already.
Yeah, but not for Thor and Hulk. I'll give them one more shot with Thor and Hulk because when you look at the first two Thor movies, and we mentioned Kenneth Branagh, who's the director of Murder on the Orient Express, he directed the first Thor movie.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, from that perspective, and even Thor the Dark World, they were kind of thinking, we've got to make Thor a serious movie. He's got to be taken seriously. Why?
Yeah.
Hemsworth wants to play him fun. Let him be fun.
And Joss Whedon enjoyed him being fun in the Avengers movies.
So let's just keep going with that. And I think it works. I think it works really
well. Oh, yeah.
Well. And I'm excited to see how this one turns out.
I think it's going to be crap. Just kidding. I will be there opening weekend.
Oh, we bet you will.
Mm-hmm.
So, with your Batman shirt on.
That's right. That's right. All right, Steven, you can take number two.
Okay, number two. This is episode 8 of Star Wars, The Last Jedi. Now, there's a good reason why we didn't put it number one, because this is a sequel to something that has never been made before, well, in accordance to number one, but number two, Star Wars, The Last Jedi, we're still riding high on The Force Awakens and Rogue One, and with a new director, new screenwriter and director, completely different take on this new trilogy that they're working on, could be very good. And it could be kind of scary because we really settled in with The Force Awakens quite nicely, but it was somewhat of a quasi-sequel reboot. So there was a lot of familiar tones with it, but I think this one has the opportunity to make it just completely different and make it more on its own and help stand this trilogy out just a little bit further away from the original two trilogies. And with Rian Johnson in there, Mr. Looper, like, I think he's going to be giving us some pretty different stuff and probably some dark and twisted stuff too, and I'm all for it. Like, I'm just excited to see this. This will be, well, because Princess Leia will be in the episode 9, right? Like, they filmed stuff for that.
No, they didn't film anything for 9 yet.
Oh, okay. So, I guess, but her character will be reappearing in that. So, that won't be the last time we see her on screen.
I don't know. Feeling
it's going to be the last time we see Luke Skywalker on screen.
I think 8's it for Leia. I don't think they're going to show her on screen at all in 9.
Well, no, her brother gave them the clearance to do the CGI for episode 9.
Oh, God, I hope they don't do that.
But, you know, and, you know, I forgot to mention when I saw Pirates, the new Pirates movie, they made Johnny, they, like, tell this story of him, how he became Jack Sparrow, and he's really young. So they did that, like, Robert Downey Jr., young age thing that they did. It's, like, really weird.
It's
really
creepy weird, like, as hell!
Yeah, they're, like, so, Disney and Marvel are so fascinated by that young age technology. So I'm just like, Johnny Depp looks weird. Like, I know what he looked like when he was younger. He didn't look like that. But I'm kind of hoping that when they do that with Carrie Fisher, which you know they probably will,
it will
be better handled. But I don't know. But back to The Last Jedi, I mean, this has such great potential. And J.J. Abrams set it up perfectly. And if he needs to, he'll bring it back to what he needs it to be for episode 9. But I don't know. I'm kind of excited to see a fresh new take on it. And we're going to be seeing it in December.
All right, so number one on our list, and I know if it was up to Jeremy, but he got outvoted, number two and number one would be switched, right,
yes.
Jeremy?
Yes.
Okay. So, the number one, because Jeremy's been outvoted 2-1. Well, I don't know. Jeremy, Steven, are you a bigger fan of the superhero films than Star Wars films?
I don't know. I mean, probably Batman, but he would be the only superhero that I would put above Star Wars if I thought about it. And, but I don't know.
Anyway, so number one on our list, right? And like I said, guys, these are in no specific order. Put these in any kind of order you want. This is just the order that we put them in.
So, Steven, you just made this list to placate to Chris. Okay, I get you.
That's right.
All right.
No.
I never do anything to help Chris out.
Bullshit.
That's true.
Well, if you let the man tell you what number one is, I'll give you my reasoning.
Okay, so number one, the Justice League.
We have to be ready. You, me, the others. There's an attack coming from far away.
Not coming, Bruce. It's already here. The others. Where are they?
Arthur Curry. The Aquaman. On him.
Organic and biomechatronic body parts. He's a cyborg.
You should probably move. Barry Allen.
Whoever you're looking for, it's not me. You're the Batman?
They said the Age of Heroes would never come again.
It has to.
Superpowers again?
I'm rich.
One thing I can tell you is you got to be free.
My turn.
Come together. Right now. Come together. Right now. Right now.
Good to see you playing well with others again.
Just like a bat. I dig it.
Maybe temporary.
There's a lot of hype. It's coming off of, I mean, DC's coming off of the extreme success of Wonder Woman and looks to keep rolling with it. And I hope it does. I almost pray every weekend that it does. So let's hear.
Joss Whedon will bring it back to form.
Is that why you put it number one?
Well, I was just saying, like, I put this number one for the same reason I would have put The Avengers at number one back in 2012, because this is some pretty groundbreaking stuff, man. Like, we've never seen this before. This is the first time in history that we've ever seen a Justice League movie. I mean, we've seen the cartoon versions. We've seen all of the DC animated films and this and that. Yeah, those are fun animated versions. They're really good and well done. But on the big screen, it's like the Avengers. Like, when the Avengers came out in 2012, we never would have expected to see something like that ever. And when it happened, it was just, it was like magic. It was like movie magic. And seeing all those characters together doing what they do was just such a great moment in films and comics. And much similar to that, like the Justice League, when you look at promotional photos of it now, like, the costumes look good. They're colorful. They're bringing some life and spectacle back into this DC franchise, which is much needed, you know? Like, yes. Zack Snyder was bringing everybody down. Oh, and I can't believe I didn't make this part of the headlines, but Matthew Vaughn, we were talking about Kingsman, and he was approached about what he would do if he got to direct Man of Steel 2, because apparently they're looking to him to do Man of Steel 2. And he said, well, it's simple. I would just bring it back to what Richard Donner did. You need a Superman that's full of life and hope. And, you know, they say hope. There wasn't much hope in Man of Steel, man. It was, like, very dreary. And he's like, I would bring Superman back to colorful, bright, bold, happy, you know, and somewhat nebbish as Clark Kent. Like, all of the qualities that made Christopher Reeve such an amazing Superman, that's what he would want to do in his version of Superman if he got to do one. And that's kind of what the Justice League needs to be. And you see some of that. Like, you've seen a lot of humor from Aquaman, from The Flash. You don't see really any from Cyborg or Wonder Woman, because she's just such a badass. She doesn't have time to be funny. But and even Batman's quipping with them. You know, he's like, I'm really fast. What's your superpower? I'm rich. You know, it's just like, that's good stuff. Like, that's what the kind of thing that they needed. But, like, the Justice League. And you know, Superman's going to be in it. Nobody's getting fooled here. You know, he's going to show up. And, again, like, this is groundbreaking cinema. And I feel like they kind of spoiled Justice League by having the Trinity and Batman v Superman. They kind of jumped the gun on that whole, like, that whole union of sorts. But seeing them all together in the Justice League, that's just movie magic all over again. And if done right, it could be your new Avengers.
True, true, true. Jeremy doesn't have high hopes, though.
None whatsoever.
He doesn't have high hopes for anything.
Okay, so that's been our list of quick 10. Real quick, do y'all have any other, like, dark horses that may be any good? We'll start with Jeremy, because I know Steven has, like, 20.
Tons.
Oh, I got a couple.
Go ahead, rattle them off.
First, coming out November 22nd, making his directorial debut, Aaron Sorkin. He wrote and directed a movie called Molly's Game, starring Jessica Chastain, Idris Elba, Kevin Costner, Michael Cera. It's based on a true story about this Olympic athlete who got in trouble playing poker or something like that, if I was reading that right. And, yeah, it sounds like it could be pretty damn good, and it's the brilliant Aaron Sorkin, so I'm sure it'll be great. And let's see here. Also coming out November 3rd, what I'm really interested in, directed by Dan Gilroy, it's called Roman J. Israel Esquire, starring Denzel Washington, Colin Farrell, and Carmen Ejogo. Yeah. It's Denzel. So I'm down for it. Whatever.
Who would you say the director of that was?
Dan Gilroy, director in Nightcrawler.
Oh, okay. And didn't he write all the Bourne movies too? I think he wrote some of them.
I think he wrote one or two of them.
That's all I got. Cool. All right. Steven. I don't have any. I mean, the ones I would say is like that I'll probably be drugged to go see. Pitch Perfect and Ferdinand the Bull.
Pitch Perfect 3,
sorry. But
I just hope that's better than the second one, man. Because the first one I really, really liked. The second one sucked, man.
Dude, you are not going to get any better than the Green Bay Packers singing, bro.
I mean, that was like the bright spot of that.
It's going to be hard to beat.
Yeah.
So, all right, Steven, let's hear your list.
Okay, a couple of the noteworthy films. We have Steve Carell and Emma Stone in Battle of the Sexes, which is a true story of the real-life tennis match between... I forgot their names, but looks good, looks funny. Tom Cruise will be in his new movie called American Made, as he's playing pretty much Johnny Depp in Blow for the Cubans. And there is a remake of Flatliners that's apparently coming out. I'm not sure what I think about that. You know how I feel about remakes anyway. And there's another one called Goodbye Christopher Robin with Ewan McGregor, as he's a grown-up Christopher Robin who's forgotten all about Pooh in the Hundred Acre Woods. Well, they come back to remind him of who he is and bring him back. It's kind of like Hook. It's like a new Hook. And
dude, that looks amazing.
It really does, man. It's going to be good. It's Disney being Disney and doing what they do best. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll be good. Jeremy, did you mention Suburbicon?
I didn't mention Suburbicon, no.
It's the new George Clooney dark comedy. A lot of murder within the suburbs with Matt Damon. And Matt Damon is also in another movie this fall called Downsizing, and it's Alexander Payne's new movie, who did Election, About Schmidt, Sideways, and what was that one with George Clooney? The Descendants, you know, so that'll be where they literally downsize, like they become tiny people, miniature peoples. It's just a very quirky sci-fi film, and that should be really good. And there's that one Netflix movie with Will Smith called Bright that's written and directed by David Ayer, where unicorns, fairies, and demons all live in, looks like, South Central Los Angeles, and it's a very gritty take on a fantasy film, so that should be pretty interesting. And speaking of horror, there is a new Insidious movie. I love the other three Insidious movies. There's no reason I'll love the fourth one, especially with Lee Winnell attached. And don't worry, just three more. And Jackie Chan, he's coming back, and he is the Foreigner, and he's going to kick the shit out of James Bond. So that should be good. Although, Martin Campbell's the director of this movie, and you would think that's a good thing considering he's the director of GoldenEye and Casino Royale, but he also directed that movie Edge of Darkness with Mel Gibson. And you remember when the trailers of that came out? It looked like a full-on action fest. It was kind of boring.
Yeah, but just a little bit.
I don't know. You don't put Jackie Chan in a dramatic film.
No.
Unless he's going to be whipping ass. So I think this one will be a lot better. And then The Darkest Hour, starring Gary Oldman, where he plays Sir Winston Churchill during the darkest hour of World War II. I don't know if you guys saw pictures of Gary Oldman as Winston Churchill, but he gained like 40 pounds and just he looks exactly like him. It is so eerie, and I have a feeling that this will finally be the much deserved Oscar that Gary Oldman has been robbed of his entire career, and I think this is the one that he's going to get it for. And finally, and for my own personal selfish gain, it is The Killing of the Sacred Deer, which reunites Colin Farrell with Yorgos Lanthimos, the director of The Lobster. I don't know what it's going to be about. It looks weird, but that's exactly what I need. And I think that about rounds it up.
The Lobster.
Oh, don't forget Christmas Day, the untitled Paul Thomas Anderson project. Starring Daniel Day-Lewis and Leslie Manville. So
I thought he was retired.
You don't retire from acting unless you're Gene Hackman. I haven't seen him do shit since 2004.
Yeah.
Oh, and A Bad Mom's Christmas.
Oh yeah,
that looks funny.
That's kind of fun too. First one.
There was another one coming out. It's like this horror Christmas comedy. I just saw a trailer for it. I forgot what it was called, but they use like Home Alone, like there's intruders in their house or something, and they like it's like very gory and stuff. So it's like Home Alone for real. Like if you smash someone in the face with a paint can, yeah, they're gonna get messed up. So I don't know. It's just kind of a funny take on all that.
Nice. Very interesting. All right, well, guys, that's gonna do it for tonight. I think next week we're going to come and try and talk about everything that's about to start up on TV. So if you want to check back in next week and get all your TV show rundowns, that's what we'll be talking about. Guys, any last thoughts before we're done?
Jeremy? No, I got nothing.
Okay. Steven?
I have my suit tailored, my gun is ready, and I am going to see Kingsman this weekend.
I will probably see Kingsman Monday or Tuesday, so we may have to talk about that. Maybe do a little small review on that before we start on the TV things next week. Again, guys, I know we went kind of quick through all this stuff. If there's a movie that we didn't mention and you want us to know about it, don't forget to tell us. We're all over the interwebs on social media, Facebook, Instagram. Just look up The Screen Addicts. And on Twitter, it's Screen_Addicts, and that's spelled ADDICS. And like always, thank you for joining us. And if you're already here, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and go ahead and leave us a rating and review. I know it's a little different now if you've already downloaded iOS 11, but I think it's just you got to scroll down to the bottom to find where to write and review now. So you can find us on Apple Podcast. You can find us on Stitcher and Google Play, and pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts, we're there. So give us a subscribe, tell your friends about us, tell your family about us, tell them don't listen to these guys, but you know, maybe give them one chance. That would be great if you would just give us one chance. I promise Steven's voice will win your heart over.
Thank you, Chris.
Maybe not that voice. But, anyway, guys, I think that's about it. And join us next week. As I said before, we'll probably be doing a TV fall preview. So, as for me, good night.
Adios, amigos.
Good evening.
Thank you for listening to the Screen Addicts Podcast. Subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play,